The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everybody, Jay here with a bit of a public service announcement. We wanted to let all of our loyal listeners know that the Agile Uprising is co-sponsoring the upcoming 12th annual Give Thanks for Scrum event produced by Agile Boston. This event is going to have the keynote speaker of Agile's own Jeff Sutherland with a QA panel in the afternoon, and as well as a host of other speakers and presenters. This event runs at 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Tuesday, November 24th, and of course, it is online. For more information, including tickets, please go to www.agileboston.org/give-thanks-for-scrum-2020. And again, we'll have a link to this in the show notes. Thanks again, all, and enjoy the show.
And welcome to another episode of the Agile Uprising podcast. We are taking another adventure in the ORSC Lab series. I'm your host, Leslie Morse, and I'm happy to be acting as the host today with a fellow member of our ORSC Lab, Billy Shetpeltz. Billy is an Agile coach and trainer that's become known for her work on conquering imposter syndrome through the invention of Oopsland, an alternate reality where we have the safety and permission to become the person we're wanting to be. Billy, I'm excited to kind of shine the spotlight on you today and get your full perspective around like your story around ORSC, why you're passionate about it, how it connects to your work as an Agilist, and really like ultimately how the ORSC work you're doing is making a difference in like your life and the life of those around you. So I'm really excited for the spotlight episode for you on the ORSC Lab series. Thanks for being here.
Hey. Yeah, so excited to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So I know, right, listeners have gotten to know you some through other episodes, but I really want to go back to the basics before we really jump into content today and spend a moment really just setting up our conversation. So the idea of high dream and low dream is a thing that we do in ORSC coaching. So what would be your high dream for this episode that we're recording right now?
This is good. So my high dream for the episode would be that someone listening to it gets connected to a concept or maybe connects some dots that it wasn't there before. So that valuable information comes out. I think that's the high dream.
And then I guess kind of on the flip side of that, right, if this episode sort of, I don't want to call it goes wrong, because, right, you know, who is to say what's right and what is wrong, or what is good and what is bad. But what would your low dream for today's conversation be?
I think my low dream would probably be if I ramble, if it's just like a random episode where people are like, what just happened? That might not be bad. Who's to say what is good and what is bad?
Stream of consciousness can be a good thing, and by some could be interpreted as rambling.
right, exactly.
So kind of with that in mind, right, you know, the high dream, right, getting people maybe connected to some new concepts or starting to connect the dots in this ORSC world, right, potentially like in this idea, maybe avoiding rambling. Are there any specific meta skills that you want us to kind of channel and bring forward into the conversation?
Yeah, I think I would like to adopt the meta skill of holding things lightly. So I'm going to hold it lightly, hold the system lightly, and then playfulness, which we're kind of already getting into, but yeah.
Yeah, our third entity is definitely very playful, which is one of the things I enjoy about working with you.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, I love that. So with those meta skills and all of that in mind, what might you need from me in the role of host today as we move through the conversation?
Probably just what you're going to do already, but like guiding the conversation or cutting it off when it needs to be cut off and watching the clock and stuff like that. So,
maybe I will bring in a meta skill around focus
Sounds good.
Sort of an intent around like, let's hold it lightly. And I'll even hold focus lightly because I want to be organic and where things go, they need to go. But kind of be playful with focus as well.
Yeah. Sounds
Does that
good.
Work for you?
Yes. Thank
awesome.
You.
Yeah. Thank you. So I know you're interested specifically, as we sort of talked about an agenda for today, around digging into what we call in ORSC the three dimensions of reality, as well as this really neat tool called the Mansion Visualization. But before we get into that agenda, I just want to ground our listeners and remind them about like what attracted you to ORSC in the first place. What's that story?
Yes. I'll go back to the definition of ORSC, or not the definition, but what the acronym stands for, because that's what attracted me. But ORSC stands for Organization and Relationship Systems Coaching. And so I had already been thinking about agile and systems thinking and all of that in an organized, like an enterprise sort of way, as a person that was working within a really big company for decades. So I got that, like I knew that. And then like my volunteer work on the side had been with people. And so I'd kind of been working a lot with human dynamics and healing and stuff. And then I went and took the ACI boot camp with Lisa Atkins and Michael Spain.
And so ACI in that instance is Agile Coaching Institute, because there's way too many acronyms in the Agile world and the ORSC world.
yes, exactly.
Yeah, so you took the ACI boot camp with Michael and Lisa.
Yeah, and in that, it was how they facilitated it. So and mainly Lisa, like, so I talked to her a lot throughout the boot camp and afterwards. And that was a long time ago now. But it was so cool for me to see a facilitator like navigating all of that in a way that I had never seen before. And so it was me saying, hey, Lisa, what's different about what you're doing? And she named both the CTI, I don't know if that's an acronym.
Coactive, yep. Yeah, Coach Co-active. Training Institute, Coactive Coaching,
yeah.
Yep.
So she explained to me what that was and then also what ORSC was. So way back then, she gave me those two and said, just start thinking about which one fits what you're doing more, what you're more interested in. So
yeah, and you've done some CTI training as well, right?
I haven't done the training, but I've been the receiver of a bunch of people that were going through certification. So I've spent like 2 years getting coached by people going through CTI certification. So
yeah,
it's been cool. They're both great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, right, the main difference there is, which, you know, we've talked about this before, right? More coactive coaching is that one-on-one, while ORSC coaching is that idea of coaching what it is the team is, or what it is the relationship or the system, kind of coaching it as a whole unit. So what was it about that idea of coaching the team or coaching the system that drew you to this versus going down the coactive path?
Number one, I don't really like people that much. No,
I don't believe that.
I know, right? Coactive did feel like it would be a lot of people time because you're sitting one-on-one with people for hours. But I had a natural skill for reading a system and reading the energy in a room and different things. I don't know if it came from my theater days because I've done a lot of live theater and you're working with a group of people on stage live, performing in front of thousands of other people, and you're constantly pivoting and changing what's happening in the system. So maybe that is where the skills started years ago, but I knew I had an innate ability to read the system that I wanted to hone and get better at.
Yeah, that's cool. And I mean, you're spot on around like reading that emotional field and picking up on that stuff. When I see you coaching in action and in courses and things we've been in together, that is very, very kind of innate to your being. And so if you've got the opportunity to be with Billy ever, you know, talk to her about that and watch her do that skill in action, because I do think you're really, really skillful at that. And then right, put yourself, like, think about yourself as an agilist. Now that right, you've done ORSC training, you're going through ORSC certification. How do you find yourself applying this body of work as an agilist?
I really kind of feel like this is the next agile frontier. So the groups that have tried agile and they feel like it's not really working, I really feel like ORSC is going to be a coaching skill that we as agile coaches can bring in and start to reveal the system back to itself to find out what it is within the system or in the flow of the system and the people, right? Because in the bottom line, these organizations are made up of people, and we can fix all of the flow within the components of the system that we want, but we still need to look at the human relationships.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we're in the relationship business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot of times, right? Yeah. You know, it just so happens that agile and technology and product and software development is the vehicle through which we're doing it. But at the end of the day, none of that gets done unless there's good human relationship between us and our clients, but amongst our clients in and of themselves and all of that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, that fascinates me. I love it.
Yeah. Any story you want to tell? Because I know you're itching to dive into the three levels of reality in this mansion technique that are just, I also happen to love them. So I know we're going to geek out on it. But any kind of story you want to offer to listeners around how you've used ORSC as an agile practitioner? That, and maybe even a crash and burn. It doesn't have to be a success story, but I think stories just resonate with people so well.
They do. I think a little bit of a crash and burn in a way, but I won't label it. But like, as I've been trying to bring some of the ORSC skills, it's fascinating. Like basically I'm training coaches to be coaches, right? So
yeah.
Internal coaches. And they want rules and they want function and clear ways to do things, but we all know it's fluid. And then watching every new internal coach, I would try to kind of reflect back to them what was seemed to be happening inside of them, because not a lot of us are aware of our secret selves or aware of what's happening inside of us. And there's one person in particular that she really got it. Like she just latched onto it and it was gorgeous. And then she took off and just started running with her own growth. And then there were some other people that just wanted to stay in the details and the rules and just watching the different growth between the internal coaches that I was kind of coaching. And so, yeah, it wasn't really a crash and burn. It's just the awkwardness of some of these deeper concepts.
Yeah.
When I'm starting to bring them into the corporate world, a lot of people are like, I don't need to know that. Like, I just need to know the rules. Like, how do I write a user story? That's all I need to know. So yeah. The crash and burn for me is trying to introduce these concepts and going, oh, that really didn't fly.
Yeah, well, it's so interesting, Billy, the way you describe sort of starting to use this as an agile practitioner so relates to the two topics you're most passionate about. Because like what I'm hearing you say is, you know, starting to leverage ORSC as an agile coach can be difficult because some people we work with are totally stuck in this thing called consensus reality. Just tell me how to do it. Just tell me how to write the user story. Just tell me how to do a stand-up the right way. If I do all the things, then I will be agile. But we know as agilists, so much of it is the philosophy and mindset, which really gets us into those other levels of reality called dreaming and essence. Right. So there's like that piece of it that I hear you talking about. And then I hear you talking about like this idea that, right, we know as agilists, we have to do systems thinking and we're looking at the whole. And if we optimize for a component, then we're de-optimizing the whole, which I remember whose thing that is, but I know that's a thing we learn, especially if we get into SAFe. Is it Deming? Is that a Deming thing? I can't even remember.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't want to claim it for him, but yeah.
Sure. I'm terrible at attributing things the right way. But like listening to you talk about that, like it's really acknowledging that we as humans are also systems and that as a single individual human, like we all have those multiple voices talking to us in our head. And so like, who are all those different voices and who are all those different inner versions of me? You called it inner selves. And the mansion's activity goes into that. So like your story is a perfect framing for where you want to go with our conversation today. The question is, which one do you want to start with?
Oh no, right? I guess, oh, that's so hard. I think let's start with the three levels of reality because it'll be harder for me to stop on the secret selves one, the mansion exercise. So we'll start with reality.
I get that, right? So I've primed it with kind of mentioning them. But like, if you were talking to somebody about the three levels of reality for the first time, like, what would you say to them?
I kind of work backwards and I say, so consensus reality is what we know as like right now, today. A lot of times this is what project management feels like because it's just tell me when this will be done. Tell me how many hours, estimate this. It feels to me anyway, the way I would describe it is very data driven, very fact driven. It's our plan. It's how we're going to get things done. So it's not bad or good. It's just tactical.
Yes. Tactical is exactly the word that when I think about consensus reality, it's like the things we actually do and see in the world, the very tactical stuff. Yeah.
And then dreaming is more like right now, a lot of people might be figuring out visions and goals for 2020 and stuff like that. So probably shouldn't give away the date. But like, it's an easy example right now to say, hey, as you're thinking about what you want to do in 2020 or what your 5-year plan is, that's dreaming because you're putting words around it.
Yep. And in fact, then, to some extent, everything about product ownership and what goes into our backlog is dreaming about the product we want to build and what features are going to delight our users.
That's true. Yeah, exactly. And then essence is, it's that feeling inside of us. It's the place that we go to that feels ethereal and essency, right? Like I know I'm reusing the same word, but, we haven't applied words to it yet. We just know in our gut. We know something
visceral. It's like that visceral response, sort of the somatic quality of what we often feel in our bodies.
And then so a lot of what we're trying to do in Agile or just as ORS coaches as well is getting people almost out of consensus reality and get them into essence. What's going on? What's their somatic response? And then put some words around it. And then we can still come back to planning. We still need all three levels.
I totally agree. And the phrase you just said there, we need all three levels, is totally important. It's like when we think about building agile teams, right? We need diversity on agile teams. And if all you ever did was essence, or all you ever did was dreaming, or all you ever did was consensus reality, you'd be missing out on the richness there. So it's about how to play with all three of them to get the best quality possible. So it's kind of like, I think of it almost as a mental model for how to explore content.
Nice. And then I also will use it for conflict as well.
Ooh, say more about that.
Yeah, because I find if somebody's like, oh my gosh, every time I'm in a meeting with X, Y, and Z, they just don't get me, blah, blah, blah. We don't see eye to eye. We can never agree. When I start asking which level each person is in, usually one person's in consensus and one's in like essence or dreaming.
Yeah.
And once I point that out and they can start to go, oh, well, let me enter your level for a little bit and then I'll come over to yours. So.
Yeah, it is. It's very, it's often actually not the content that is in clash or the humans that are in clash. It is the levels of reality clashing with each other. Because if we're communicating in two different channels, no wonder, you know, I'm sending you stuff in Morse code and you're sending it in like, you know, I don't know, woo-woo energy ways.
Right.
No wonder we're not communicating with each other.
Right.
Yeah. So what is it about this idea of the three levels of reality that has really resonated with you and gotten, like, because I know this is a thing you work with a lot, is an agilist and as a ORSC coach and just in your life in general?
So and I do a lot of conference speaking too, which I think you mentioned, but like for me, the three levels of reality have been really important at the conference level and in different presentations. So anytime I know I want to shift a people group or really, really shift a group into learning something, I have to get them out of consensus reality. And it's that playfulness. It's getting to do super fun things, or like you said in the bio, creating another world. That for me unlocks them. And then we can move back through the levels and come out with some really cool plans and action items. But it's been really useful there.
Yeah, because in the land of dreaming, anything's possible.
Right. Yeah. So I'll also talk about, since we're going to talk about mansions, the other thing that makes me chuckle about the three levels of reality is once we went into secret self-work for myself, I found that a lot of my personal conflict and my hating certain parts of life is because I had a secret self inside of me that was throwing a temper tantrum every time someone tried to pull me into details and tactical stuff, because a part of me wanted to stay in essence and dreaming. That's just
So it's almost like which of your inner roles or which of your inner selves is the best at consensus reality, and how do you call that forward based on the situation? So it's kind of like situational awareness and situational leadership is, I think, a really important piece of consensus or of this three levels navigation. Yeah.
That's a good way to say it. Yeah.
The other thing that I think about, and I'm curious if you share a similar experience, Billy, is that there's something, because you mentioned conferences. So it happens there, right? At all these conferences we go to, we meet agilists we've never met before. But when you meet them, you're like, oh my gosh, it feels like I've known you forever. And for whatever reason, there's an essence to sort of who we are as people, as agilists.
So true.
That it's like it's like being at home.
Yeah.
And like we can't describe what it is. It's just this feeling of like, oh, we're the same people.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so like to me, that is like the best way that I've described essence to other people. Cause the moment, and you alluded to this earlier, the moment you start putting words to it, it starts chasing the feeling away. Cause you're getting all cerebral and not somatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I love that. That's a great example. You're right. Because we do, like, even if it's somebody we've never met before, we start hugging each other.
Yes. Yeah. And I know I've found a similar thing as I've met more and more ORSC coaches and students of ORSC as a methodology. There's an essence thing that's very similar. Like the Venn diagrams of Agile essence and ORSC essence have significant overlap, which is a very consensus reality way of explaining essence.
That's awesome. Thanks for pulling us through all three levels there. You passed certification.
If I could dream about what essence is like in this way, that's how I describe it.
Oh my gosh. A few people may need to rewind that. That was a deep thought.
And right. So, I mean, we're being playful, right? That was the meta skill we wanted to bring in. What else for you about the three levels of reality do you think is important to share with people?
I just think this one little thing, and it's not little, but like it's just one understanding, one diagram could change so much conflict in our Agile teams and our Agile organizations.
Yeah.
I just think it's really powerful once people know about it.
Yeah. And I'll bring that back to your comments around how creating awareness that the three levels of reality exist and how conflict is often with the levels of reality clashing. And that can be such a simple anecdote to a lot of the challenges we face. Because we do so often live in consensus reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like a story about this recently was a big event was happening. I was working with some new Agile coaches that had only known me at social functions or conferences. Well, when I'm running an event, I'm in consensus reality and I'm a D on the disc. where at conferences, I'm an I on the disc. And so they were all just kind of staring at me like, what's happening to Billy? I don't
know. Like, you're an alien right now.
Right? And I just had to call it out. I was like, hey, guys, right now, this is who I am. I'm running this. I'm in consensus. And at the time, I didn't have those words. So I said, I'm a D on the disc right now. I'll go back to I promise. I won't stay here. But they said thank you. They said thank you so much for verbalizing that. Because they didn't know how to respond to, they didn't know what was happening. So just putting words around it, people, is good.
Yeah, that I love that framing, Billy, because it reminds me of, and I'll bring it back to the thread of the Agile Coach Bootcamp and the ACI Agile Competency Model, right? Your Agile Coaching Competency Framework around, right, you know, mentoring and teaching versus coaching and facilitation, and being really clear with our clients. Like, I'm wearing facilitator hat right now. I don't have attachment to the content. Yeah. Right? I'm wearing the teacher hat. I'm being a subject matter expert. Like, being really clear about what hat it is you're wearing, which, by the way, I'll get on my soapbox for a moment. The hat of consultant is an important one in that mix, which also falls on the expert side of it with teaching and mentoring, you know, and acknowledging I'm not wearing a coaching hat or a teaching or facilitating or mentoring. I'm wearing a consultant hat right now. And just being clear about that is similar to like declaring and having intention around what level of reality we want to invite people to play in, or naming it as the levels of reality are shifting as you're going through as a facilitator.
Right. Because that's freeing. So people don't think they're doing something wrong. Or
Yeah. And inviting in all of it, that diversity and the richness that comes from it.
Yeah. Yep. I love it. Yeah. That's great.
And so to get us back to the consensus reality of this episode,
right.
Bringing in my meta skill of focus, right? I know you had that agenda of also wanting to talk about this mansions visualization. And I think a cool thing about this is that the mansions visualization allows the client, in the coaching sense, to play with all three levels of reality, especially dreaming. Right. So much of this exercise is about dreaming and tapping into essence and then taking that into consensus reality and making some choices about like what you might want to do. So let's talk about, right, this mansion visualization, why you love it, what it is, and all of that.
Yeah. Like, and I think I used the word unlock before. And
yeah.
For me, it really unlocks a person. And I'm going to read a quote right out of the ORSC manual because I thought it was so awesome. So it says, to be in right relationship with our partners, we must first be in right relationship with ourselves by allowing internal deep democracy.
Oh, will you just read that one more time? Because I know, right, listeners are probably not able to like, wait, let me pause that and write it down, or let me rewind and hear that again. So give it to us one more time, Billy.
Yeah. To be in right relationship with our partners, we must first be in right relationship with ourselves by allowing internal deep democracy.
What about that is so important for you?
And I'll admit it took me quite a few years of hearing the words deep democracy to kind of get it. So if anybody out there is like, that is the weirdest phrase I've ever heard, it's as simple as all voices heard. So think of it that way. When you hear the words deep democracy, it's all voices heard. But so often, or what's important about it for me is I had a ton of voices that weren't heard. And so often the people I'm coaching also, like, we're just as you stay in one level of reality, you kind of only listen to one identity of yourself.
Yes. What are you marginalizing about yourself?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. What aren't you bringing to work is one of the super playful kind of checking questions you can do, like, which part of yourself do you never show at work?
Yeah. And right, there's so much of a movement is, you know, that phrase, bringing back humanity to the workplace, which you hear lots of people say, bring your full self to work, right? That only can truly happen if you're in touch with who are you as your full self.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And so that is that idea of deep democracy, in there. And it also, right, that idea of right relationship, I think back to, and so I'll use this as an opportunity to plug the Women in Agile podcast series, which I also am involved with, in an episode with Portia Tung, where she referenced the quote that I will butcher and not attribute because I'll get it wrong, but you cannot give what it is you do not have.
Yes.
So if you're not in right relationship with yourself, how can you ever help build right relationship within your client situations, whether it be as an ORSC coach or an Agile coach?
Yeah. And actually in my workshops, I phrase it a little different. And like the premise of one of our things is that nobody can create psychological safety to a level except what they have internally themselves. So if you're beating yourself up inside and you're being critical to yourself and you're calling yourself a failure and a dummy and all that, it will come out. The people around you are going to feel that too, even if you're not saying it. So if you want psychological safety for others around you, you have to do the work, the internal work, to make it safe for yourself.
Yeah. And I think that's honoring deep democracy of self.
Yeah. That's why I love that quote so much. I'm like,
it's perfect. It's perfect. Yeah. So with that, how does this mansion visualization exercise allow that to manifest itself?
So I like to go through the exercise several times, but like the first time through, you get a few of the selves and you kind of meet. It's almost like greeting and meeting people you haven't met before because you're imagining it all in your head. And over time, you actually come back to the exercise and just keep building it out. And I call him Team Billy. So that's my team, Billy. So whenever I'm under stress or conflict or worried about things, even at the dentist, I called on Team Billy because I hate dentists. So it's become a really cool thing for me to call on. Yep. And pretty much the way I've used it or the way it's impacted me, we haven't talked about edges, but in ORSC, we have edges that we're trying to cross into a future state or something new. And usually it's a secret self that is not letting me cross the edge. So I've used the mansion exercise to kind of debate and figure out which secret self is holding me back. And which secret self wants to stay in current state and which one wants the new future. And then they actually dialogue and I find alignment between myself.
Yeah.
Which makes me sound crazy. But
yeah. And I think that's a risk here. Like, I mean, we're walking this line of, I don't know the exact psychiatric term or psychological term of like having multiple voices or multiple personalities, because it's not like that. Yeah. This really is like, we have inner conflict between these conflicting perspectives within ourselves all the time. And to kind of ground it is, right, the mansion visualization as an exercise is literally one of those things that you do where like you're working with a coach or a facilitator. And as the client, you're sitting with a notebook and the coach or the facilitator sort of like reading you this story and asking you to dream about this mansion where you and all versions of you live. And so it might be like, you know, their prompts could be like, and in that house, what does the room look like that is the room where the version of you you take to work lives? Mm-hmm. And what's in that room? And what's the color of the walls? And what are the things? And what do you do there? Yeah. And right. And how is that room different than the outrageous and crazy version of you?
Right.
Like what's that room different? Like, and so there's all these different prompts that you can use to create essentially these rooms of a mansion and help get clear about all the different, what I think you're calling them, inner selves.
Secret
selves, yes. Yeah. Secret roles, inner roles, all of this sort of stuff. So I'll also like to just provide a little bit more clarity and reference, and we can definitely put this into the show notes. Like people that are interested in this idea of secret selves, or specifically like what is your inside team? There's a book by Cynthia Lloyd-Darst, right? She's a master coach. She's CTI coactive trained as well as ORCS trained. I think she's faculty for both of them. But her book is called Meet Your Inside Team, How to Turn Internal Conflict into Clarity and Move Forward with Your Life, right? It's a short book. It's full of exercises. So like that's kind of like a deep dive into this mansion visualization. But I think if we want to translate it to the coactive language, it's sort of like the idea of captain and crew that a coactive coach might do with you. And so I just kind of wanted to ground people in some of that education around like this, because like what you're talking about is so rich from the benefits of it. And I love the fact that you talk about doing it multiple times, because I've done the same thing. And it's like, oh yeah, I've done the mansion visualization. But every time you do it, like I find a new place in me.
How big is my mansion?
Yeah.
And like, so a couple story examples for the people listening. I have an experimenter on Team Billy who likes, it's like a laboratory and they're running experiments, and it's the crazy scientist with the glasses and crazy hair and all that. And then I also have Free Spirit Billy, who likes to be a hippie, and she's all dreaming, all essence, right? But then there's one of the conflicts I had to work out was over somebody that I'm calling Duty Billy. So D-U-T-Y. And she is the consensus reality person. She's the one that's keeping everything running. Here's what you should do. You should do this. You should do that. So I used to just try to avoid her at all costs, but every role in a system has a purpose. It's a function of the system. There's a reason that the system needs that voice. That's why we talk about voice of the system. So I had to do some work on coming to terms with her and embracing that side of embracing what she's trying to bring in instead of just constantly pushing it away. Because these secret selves can get triggered, right, Leslie?
Yeah, for sure.
We've done triggering work in all the courses, and that's a whole nother thing. I won't go into that. But yeah, so Duty Billy was getting triggered because the rest of Team Billy didn't like her.
Yeah.
So
I love the thread that you're pulling on there, is that in order for a full system to work, all of these roles must be present. So it's like the fractals and the scaling of roles. Right? That system must be whole in and of ourselves as a single human being biologically, right? Yeah. Those roles are present on teams that we work on, in our organizations and in our families and in our enterprises and all of these things. Like this idea of all of the roles must be present in order for the system to function in a healthy way. The question is like balancing those, honoring them, not marginalizing them.
Yes.
And if for some reason your inner role of Duty Billy was vanquished,
right,
it would be replaced by some other version of inner Billy that provides the same function. Just as if someone vacates the Scrum Master role on an Agile team, someone else will occupy that role on the day the Scrum Master happens to be out sick, or when the lottery doesn't come back to work. Yeah, or whatever it is.
Stuck.
And this is where I'm going to get curious about you and your inner selves in your mansion. Okay. Is the idea of role nausea. When you get stuck playing a role over and over and over and over again, and you just get nauseous, like, oh my gosh, I have to keep playing Duty Billy, and I don't want to play Duty Billy anymore. And I'm just making that up as an example, because I know you don't love consensus reality. Like, it's not your natural place, right? Essence and dreaming is your natural place. So perhaps maybe beyond Duty Billy, like, where do you find role nausea as you explore your inside team and those secret selves?
It's probably still a little bit around the duty, but a different aspect of it. So, and this just popped into my mind. So I'm actually like revealing something to myself right now through the call. So thank you.
It's like a little like coaching today.
That's a really good question. And I think it's going to be in self-care, right? Like role nausea of having to do laundry, having to do my budget, having to support, earn a paycheck. So duty is a pretty broad topic. And that's why I think I'll actually have like a self-care role that is just feels tiring sometimes.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it needs to be done.
Yeah. And I actually invite you not to call it self-care, especially given the conversation in society around how self-care is care of self. Right. And that stuff that you just described does not sound like care of self. That sounds like care of functional life. So I don't know what you're going to name that role, but like doing your laundry, yes, is taking care of you, but not in the way that we think of self-care, like time for reflection or meditation or unplugging.
Yeah. Well, that leads to a really interesting conversation that's probably for another time, that since I live in Essence and Dreaming, I do the reflection all the time, right?
Yeah.
So maybe self-care is like a continuum of a bunch of stuff. And I'm really good at what most people struggle at for self-care.
Yeah. How does self-care manifest itself across all three levels of reality?
Right. Maybe. Oh my gosh. That could probably be a much longer conversation.
Yes. But, let's go meta again.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Because my definition of self-care is the functional day-to-day life. Because I will live in Essence and Dreaming all the time if I could. Yeah. But that's not being kind to my world and myself.
Yeah.
But
So before we wrap up, what else needs to be said on the mansion exercise or the three levels of reality?
I would just propose that the people listening, if they're coming to an edge or a change in their life and they're feeling like something's not working and they're resisting the change, these are two things that they can use to ask themselves, what's resisting the change within me? What level of reality is this change in? And then switch levels to think about it differently. But yeah, just if something's coming up for you as you're listening to this, or you're trying to climb a mountain, you can use these tools that we're talking about.
I know we're like, this podcast is only audio and we're getting to see each other in video. And I just made this like face, like I had a moment where I go, force field analysis, which is you learn it in ORSC training. You also learn force field analysis in other sorts of like business consulting and business management training. But what would it be like if you did force field analysis, intentionally channeling a meta skill of each level of reality? Because you're going to get vastly different information.
Right.
So like, that's like, and I love force field analysis. Yeah. I use it, right. ORSC as leader, which is often the position I operate from. I use force field analysis in that a lot. And so thank you for giving me that gift, Billy.
I love it. That's awesome. And now I want to go do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'll move us towards wrap up. Before we do close, I've got a couple questions for you. So someone that might be thinking about embarking on their ORSC journey, or maybe they're early in their ORSC journey, whether or not they're an Agile practitioner, what advice might you give them?
Be prepared to go deep. So this is deep work. And everyone warned me it's like a second job. And I'm like, no, how hard can it be? It is all consuming. And you can't glide through it. There's really no like surface way to get certified in ORSC. The five courses are awesome. Like everybody should do those. But if you're going to go through the certification with the 100 hours, actually be sure that you're ready to take on a second job.
Yeah.
It's awesome though. Like the depth of learning that I'm getting is amazing.
Yeah. What would you say is the single thing that you've learned and now have access to that you didn't before?
Holding system as client.
Ah, which we'll have to cover in another episode.
Yeah.
But holding system as client is, I love that. Yeah. What else? Or I guess maybe what else about that? Let me reframe the question.
Yeah,
what else about that idea?
Right. So it's, I think as coaches so often we're actually determining in our mind what's wrong with the situation or something. And especially as a consultant, right? So holding system as client is really just trying to hear that voice of the system.
Yeah.
And it sounds like so I'm all the way through the Dunning-Kruger curve now. Like I'm at the bottom where, oh my God, I don't know anything. And I did start with like, hey, I'm pretty good at this.
Yes, the more you know, the less you know.
Exactly. So like my mind is just blown on the skill of being able to hold the system as the client that I'm coaching, not the people in front of me.
Yeah.
I'm not coaching the people, I'm coaching the system. And it's a very intricate skill. Like there's so many.
It's super nuanced, but so important.
Yes.
I think that's great advice. I think that's a huge insight, one that I definitely share. So I'll bring us back to the beginning, right? You had sort of predefined an agenda for our conversation around exploring the three dimensions reality in the Mansion Technique. How did we do on that?
I think it was great. It was fun.
Okay. And then your high and low dream, right? Being connected, like turning people onto new concepts and helping them connect dots, right? Was your high dream. Your low dream was like, oh, I don't want to ramble. So like of those two dreams, like what are you closer to, your high dream or your low dream?
Closer to the high dream.
Oh, why? How do you know that?
Because I feel like the sentence you used before, we pulled on a lot of threads and connected a lot of concepts, hopefully. Like that's my hope. I'm not listening to it. So if you're listening to it, you'd be like, no way. But we introduced information, but connected it with stories and how things interact with each other.
Yeah. So I think I totally agree. I have the same opinion. I would be closer to your high dream as well. I think we did a good job of like being playful, right? Holding stuff lightly, focusing on the topics. How might you describe the third entity that we've created through this conversation?
I feel like it's a mix of my experimenter in a laboratory who's about 7 years old on a playground.
yeah. It's like, I'm like baby Yoda is like the thing right now. It's like, it's a little like our third entity is a little like baby Yoda. It's wise, but playful.
Exactly. Like, ooh, okay, let's put it on the slide now.
Awesome. Yeah. So Billy, thank you so much for allowing us to like, you know, put the spotlight right on you today. In this conversation, we'll get to do it with me. We'll get to do it with Andrew as well. So it was a ton of fun getting to host you and explore your world as an Agilist and an ORSC coach. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Awesome.
Yeah. And thanks for listening to this episode of the ORSC Lab series on Agile Uprising. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and invite you to follow the hashtag ORSC, O-R-S-C, on Twitter and be part of the conversation. You can also subscribe to the Agile Uprising podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider so you can get new episodes as soon as they're available. Thanks for listening.